listening to Latin Experts, a podcast of Latino studies at the University of Texas at Austin. Latin Experts features the voices of faculty, staff, and students, as well as friends and alumni of the Department of Mexican American and Latino Studies, the Latino Research Institute, and the Center for Mexican American Studies. Join us for this episode of Latin Experts. Episode 3. How does anti-Black racism keep police violence from being seen as a Latinx issue? Our guests today include first Aaron G. Fountain Jr., a PhD candidate at Indiana University in Bloomington, Indiana. He has done freelance writing for Al Jazeera America, Latino Rebels, Black Perspectives, The Hill, Medium, and others. Our second guest today is Marisol Lebrun, an assistant professor in the Department of Mexican American and Latino Studies at the University of Texas at Austin. She is the author of Policing Life and Death, Race, Violence, and Resistance in Puerto Rico, and co-author, along with Yadamar Bonilla, of Aftershocks of Disaster, Puerto Rico Before and After the Storm. Let's listen.
Aaron, it's so great to have an opportunity to be in conversation with you. I've been following your work for a really, really long time, and I'm really excited to hear your thoughts about this current moment that we're in. Following the police murder of George Floyd, we've seen uprisings against police violence all across the country and even around the world. This has led to some uneasy conversations about how Latinx people fit into these protests and the movement for Black Lives' call to end police violence more broadly. Police violence in the U.S. is often painted as an issue that doesn't affect Latinx people in the same ways that it affects Black folks. We don't really see Latino politicians, media, or even activists necessarily centralizing the question of police repression and brutality in the same way that we've seen immigration, for instance, being squarely positioned as a Latinx issue. So this is something that concerns me as a scholar of policing and as a Latinx studies scholar for a couple of reasons. First, I think it ignores Blackness within the Latinx community and the ways in which Black Latinx people are disproportionately targeted by police as well as vigilante violence in this country. Not to mention the informal policing of Black Latinx folks that takes place within Latinx spaces and also makes them more vulnerable to surveillance and state violence. Second, I think it ignores the long history of criminalization and police repression that Latinx people have encountered in the U.S., as well as that they may have been fleeing in their home countries. Latinx history has always been intertwined with the history of policing in the United States. We can think of the incredible work of historian Kelly Lytle Hernandez in her books Migra and City of Inmates, which I highly recommend, where she shows how policing is not only central to the creation of the border and the U.S. as a settler nation, but also necessary in order to insert Latinx people into a racial hierarchy. Similarly, Monica Munoz Martinez and Ken Gonzalez Day have shown how Mexicans and Mexican Americans were criminalized and lynched in Texas and other parts of the Southwest in order to take their lands and teach them about their place within American society. During the 1960s, we saw groups like the Young Lords take on questions of police repression and brutality, and today we see the ways in which young Black and brown folks are swept up in stop and frisk policing all around the nation. Despite centuries of evidence to the contrary, policing isn't understood as a Latinx issue. And this, I think, tells us a lot about how Latinx people are popularly constructed and, as a result, how they understand themselves in relation to Blackness. So this is what I wanted to dig into with you today, Aaron, drawing on your extensive research on these questions and topics. So I'm really excited to get started. So I think the first question I wanted to get into with you, you've written a lot about how you think respectability politics plays a big role in why police violence against Latinx people doesn't get more attention from media and politicians. And I was wondering if you could say a little bit more about this.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to be here. And before I go into the question, I should preface it with what people have said, well, the reasons people have stated why this issue doesn't receive the same amount of attention. attention. So since the Ferguson protests in 2014, there's been journalists and political pundits who try to investigate why this issue doesn't receive the same amount of attention. And the reasons they cite tend to be pretty similar. So for one, they cite media bias, and that's inextricably linked to Latinx for representation in media organizations. So you have a media company that's majority white, that's going to limit the perspective of the staff. Others have argued a black-white binary, which they argue makes Latinx individuals invisible. And one that's pretty legitimate is the statistical limitation. So you have Roberto Rodriguez. He's an associate professor of Mexican American Studies at the University of Arizona. And his research, he's looked at how police departments report Latinx victims of police shootings. And he found out that many of them were classified as white or unknown. So most of the official data we have is actually an undercount. And, well, there's others who argue that immigration is just more of a present issue. And then you have a syndicate columnist, Esther Cepeda, who argue that Latinx and African Americans just don't get along. And her example was largely cited in Chicago, which I think is actually quite limited. So my intervention is this, is that I argue that while I think all those arguments have legitimacy, I think they do underlook respectability politics. And what do we know? Since the 1980s, there has been a desire by liberals and conservatives alike, Latinx and non-Latinx, to portray Latinx as upwardly mobile, hardworking, family-oriented, entrepreneurial, law-abiding, and inherently conservative. Now, most of these narratives are a rebuke to the negative portrayals of Latinx in media, film, as well as in political campaigns. Now, this is not a large group of people, but they do tend to have the largest microphone. So I think of the Latino Donor Collaborative, which is a nonprofit organization dedicated to promoting positive images of Latinx. A few years ago, they had an interview with Charlie Rose where they pretty much asserted all those narratives that I already just stated previously. And this narrative is also purported by non-Latinx individuals. So I think of journalist Michael Baroni in his 2000 book, The New Americans, where he compared Latinx to Italians and in terms of their pathway to assimilation. And he even condemned the Chicano movement as prohibiting assimilation for Mexican Americans particularly. And his main motivation was to convince his conservative peers that Latinx aren't and won't be a burden on society. So to make the Republican Party a little bit more appealing to Latinx voters. But like all respectability politics, classism is definitely embedded in it. So one thing the political right has done with the police brutality narrative issue is that they have portrayed it as one of pathology. So victims of police brutality are deemed as criminals and deemed that they had it coming to them. And with that narrative, it's pretty hard to incorporate Latinx into a narrative without challenging various respectability narratives. But in terms of also classism, we understand that while anybody can be a victim of police violence as well as police harassment, this is an issue that disproportionately affects the poor and working class, since those neighborhoods are policed the most.
Yeah, I mean, I think this question of how criminality and victim blaming is so baked in often to how we talk about police violence that it actually incentivizes folks to distance themselves from recognizing these moments of police violence when they occur, right? And I think the points that you're making around, you know, a lot of what a scholar Arlene Davila has called Latino spin, right? This notion of Latinos as kind of the new white ethnics, right? The new group that's going to assimilate and you know, retain certain aspects of a culture, right, that is kind of decorative, for lack of a better word, but that is going to not be a problem, that is hardworking, contributing, all of that kind of stuff, right? I think these are really important points as to, like, what exactly is going on with this, not refusal necessarily, but as you're saying, an undercount, right? That there's a lot of kind of factors that are playing in. And I think in particular, the ambiguities that you're pointing out also in terms of Latinos' racial makeup, right? Like, are and how these questions come into play, right? Are they white? Are they black? Are they brown? Is Latino a race or an ethnicity, right? How are we distinguishing these? All complicate, I think, our ability to capture exactly what is going on.
Yeah, and I will add, too, that many of the individuals who purport this narrative, while I do understand where they're coming from, they largely represent the middle and upper middle class, and some of them come from middle and upper middle class backgrounds. So there definitely is a gap with understanding the issues that affect poor working class people.
Right. So one of the things I've noticed that sometimes when police violence against Latinx people is spoken about, it can actually end up reinforcing anti-Blackness as opposed to challenging it or creating opportunities for solidarity. So, for instance, one of the things we saw during the first wave of Black Lives Matter protests following the police murder of Michael Brown and the uprising in Ferguson was a non-Black Latinx activist accused Black activists of ignoring police violence against Latinx people. This has come up again with the recent wave of Black Lives Matter uprisings after the killing of George Floyd. So we'll hear refrains like Latinx lives matter, Brown lives matter, with the implication being that Latinx people are left out of the movement for Black lives and the kinds of police violence that they experience are somehow unique, right? And so I was wondering, how do you make sense of this phenomenon? What do you think is going on there?
That's a good question. This is a pattern I've noticed whenever African-American drama is in the headline. People looking to ask, what about Latinx? And some individuals feel that their issues are being undermined or deemed as insignificant. And I've even seen this extend to pop culture when it comes to, like, Black films that pretty much gets a lot of rewards and it draws questions like about Latinx roles in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. So I think these attitudes stem from a few areas. One is the perception that Latinx and African-Americans are two groups that are inherently in conflict with one another, and the perception that one group's gain is another loss. So I think of the mayoral election in Chicago between Chewy Garcia and Rahm Emanuel,
right,
which the African-American vote got divided. Most voted for Rahm Emanuel, but there was an undertone or perception that if Garcia won, he would only cater to the Latinx community in Chicago and ignore the issues among African-Americans. Of course, Chewy Garcia actually was a respected activist in the city, but those seeds were pretty much sold between the two groups, and it didn't help the relationship between two groups in the city. Another area I would argue, too, is that Latinx understand that they had at times had a shared and overlapping history with African Americans, and the plight of African Americans are inextricably linked with Latinx. And we see this when sometimes the two groups will collaborate. I think of San Francisco after the police killing of Alejandro Nieto, where a group of activists started a hunger strike. And one of the activists did acknowledge the similarities between Latinx and African-Americans. In fact, I remember the parents of Alejandro Nieto attended the funeral of Mario Woods, an African-American man who was murdered in San Francisco. And both neighborhoods are actually pretty geographically separated. And we saw this in Cicero when there was gang violence among Latinx trying to protect their businesses during the George Floyd protests. And community activists acknowledged the similarities between the two groups as well. But on the other hand of this narrative, there is this contingent that tries to distance Latinx from African-Americans during protests against police brutality. They often cast Latinx as passive. So in that one article I wrote recently, I mentioned Hector Tovar, who argued that Latinx had a rage deficit, and cited his conversation with students at the California State University of Los Angeles. He promoted this respectability narrative that they resisted, but it just looked different. They just got good grades, try to be the breadwinners of their family, and that's they take care of their families. Mm-hmm. I'm a little concerned about the pattern because I think people should be outraged about unarmed lives and that's gunned down no matter whenever the issue is dominated headlines. Right. But don't get it wrong, there is a lot of protest that occurs, but it just doesn't really receive a whole lot of attention. Mm-hmm.
So, Aaron, I think these points that you're bringing up about these questions of what, you know, I think is a familiar kind of trope when talking about either Black-Brown relations, Black and Latino relations, Black and African-American relations, this notion of competition versus coalition, right? This is something that I think we see a lot of discussion about. It's been, I think, you know, framed as the kind of only frame for understanding, I think, kind of questions around Blackness and Latinidad, and I think to a tremendous amount of detrimental harm, right, for understanding the kind of complexities of these relationships, of how race operates and racial embodiment and categorization. And I appreciated you bringing up Alex Nieto. For folks who don't know the case of Alex Nieto is essentially a killed by gentrification, right? He's in a gentrifying area of San Francisco. He's on his lunch break, and people kept calling the police and saying, saying he was a suspicious character, and the police came and killed him, right? They shot him, and there's a really fantastic piece about this, about Alex Nieto being a victim of gentrification, right, and being killed by gentrification that I really recommend folks to look up and read. But, you know, Alex Nieto's case, I think, shows us exactly what you're talking about, right, the kinds of benefits of thinking about the complexities of relationality and spatial relations, right, and how we kind of think about these issues, right, the fact that African Americans and other Black folks and Latinx folks of all kinds of ethnicities and races are often in really close proximity to one another, right? And so that creates a number of ways in which Latinx folks might not experience exactly the same kinds of policing, right, as Black folk, non-Black Latinx folks, I should say, will experience the same kinds of policing, but that there are shared commonalities, right, in terms of what we see of over-policing, of the ways in which gentrification and policing collide and often make life incredibly deadly and difficult for both kind of Black folks and Latinx folks, right? And so I think this is really important. And I think a point for us to kind of always push back when we hear these narratives, right, where it's often positioned as a zero-sum game. Right. If Black folks are, as you noted, right, getting attention over something, then Latinx are losing out. Right. And so I think that's such an urgent point that you're making that we have to always push back on, whether it's in the media or whether it's in terms of these questions of police violence and things like that. So one of the things I wanted to also talk to you about that, you know, I think we've seen a lot in this recent wave of uprisings is what you've called riot shaming, right? And Latinx folks have been doing a lot of that recently. So, you know, you hear Latinx people saying things like, oh, we don't destroy our neighborhoods like they do, right? This kind of adversarial notion and relationship. There's also been cases reported in Chicago and New York City, as well as Los Angeles, of Latinx folks forming armed patrols to protect their neighborhoods from looting and even attacking Black folks who were seen as outsiders and a threat to the community, right? Once again, I think obviously ignoring the fact that there are Black Latinx folks that live in these communities, right? Mm-hmm. So you've written a lot about what's wrong with these